Welcome to the SEO Insider with your host, Seth Price, founder of Blue Shark, taking you inside the world of legal marketing and all things digital.
Welcome, everybody. We're so excited to have you back on the Insider here. Today, we have Raquel Gomez from Staffy, co-founder there. Welcome, Raquel.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
So look, you guys have made great inroads in bringing the global marketplace to law firms in the U.S. Talk to me a little bit about what that process has been like, right? There's lots of opportunities to hire people from overseas, but you guys seem to have added some value add in a way that others haven't. So talk to me about a little bit how you position Staffy in the market.
Yeah. So yes, we do things very differently over here, starting by the hiring process, defining the role with the law firm. So a lot of law firms, the first mistake they do when working with offshore remote staff is they're rushed into it. They're desperate to hire. They don't take the time to define the role. So yeah, then just jumping ahead, the one thing that we do is that we constantly coach everybody that is placed with the law firm because, you know, it doesn't end after you offer the talent. Okay, you have a great match here, you interview them, you hire them, but then there is a whole new stage and a whole new process that you have to have done right in order to be successful, right? The onboarding has to be done right. You have to continuously train them, you have to coach them, you have to mentor them. They have to feel integrated into your law firm in order for you to be successful. So I'll stop there because I'm talking a lot.
There's a lot there. So, you know, law firms, hiring is not easy no matter what, domestic, international, et cetera. And sort of my whole take on it is, and this is going back even before Staffy was in the game, was that hiring internationally, if you don't have systems and processes in place, you're dead in the water. Forget about it. Like you just, the difference between culture, sometimes time zones, expectations. So as you've gone through this process, right, you've seen, what are some of the biggest mistakes you see law firms make when bringing on a global talent? I hate the term VA. I think it should be put to the side.
Absolutely.
Right. To me, it's tough because even around the table, I have people, they keep reverting. I'm like, no. For us, does it really matter where on the planet somebody sits? Now, there are times where the people you're getting have different education for lower level tasks. And yes, it's a different category. And I get that. But the more that it's thought of as a global workforce, because you know, if you have a person in Omaha that moves to Copenhagen, do you really care if the person is seamless and they check on and they do their hours, does that matter? But I'll digress. Talk to me a little bit about the mistakes, because I see a lot of people hire international talent and it crashes and burns. And look, they hire domestic talent, it crashes and burns as well. So that's not special. I talk about the rule of three, like in domestic hires, which very often the first person's right, the second person's not right, it's the third. I think that rule of three probably is analogous to some of the issues you see in that people don't even know what they need.
Yeah.
And what you talked about in the opening, which was putting stuff together. So what are the biggest mistakes you see law firms make?
So that's the first one, not knowing what you need before you hire and just jumping too quick into hiring the person.
And there are times when you think you know what you need, but it's not really what you need. Meaning you think you know what it is, right? You think you need this, but when so first is knowing what you need, because I'm going to come back, remind me, which is what are the things that would allow people to not, you know, and again, well, the corollary to what the mistakes are, understanding that you have to know what you need. Is there a way that you think that law firms could do an exercise to figure out what it really is?
Yeah, I think, whoever, if you're hiring for yourself, audit your time, write down everywhere where you're spending your time during the work hours. If it's someone else, if it's another department, have the manager, like what are the things that you need that person to take on? What are the things that either it's overloading yourself or other team members that you need to hand over? And those should be down to tasks. So that's why we've built this methodology.
When for international labor, you're saying, and it's probably good for both, but if you can get it down to tasks, you have your best chance for success.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's number one.
And I think for smaller firms, that's difficult because they don't have that necessarily. And they're hoping the person comes in with enough experience and gumption to be able to create that. But that's not really what you're getting with a global workforce, especially at the rates you're providing.
Right, exactly. And a lot of law firms, the smaller ones, they think, wow, I'm just going to bring someone in. They're going to figure things out on their own. They won't figure things out on their own. You have to have a process. You have to have an onboarding, like you said, and you work with offshore.
I see the Blue Shark, I see the Price Benowitz, and I see the Blue Shark clients, the success.
Right.
We're now at the point of Price Benowitz. We have a full-time onboarder. It sounds like that's some of what Staffy's figured out, though, is that you try to bridge the gap, knowing that many of the smaller to mid-sized law firms don't have that. It's not perfect, meaning it's not perfect in that you can do so much, but you're trying to make up for some of the things that the average law firm doesn't have.
Right. So if I would say define the role, which goes down to the task level, then you have to put the right person to match for that role. So if you need someone to do client facing and intake, it's a different personality, different soft skills than if someone to do paralegal work, you know? So that's why assessing. We use a lot of assessments.
What do you like? What are your favorite assessments?
Cultural index we use.
We love it. How do you do cultural versus predictive?
We looked into predictive years ago. I think, I don't know if they're, I would be lying if I say, are they super similar right now?
Similar,
right?
Right. There's definitely pieces there. And I think that for international culture might have a slight advantage, because the biggest issue is there's an elephant in the room, is that you're coming from a different culture and can somebody fit in?
Right. Absolutely. So then the assessments, but also, you know, finding that, making sure that you're hiring someone who is honest, who's ethical. So I think calling those job references, calling universities to make sure that they're not lying. You don't want to hire liars.
Of course not, but it's easier said than done. This is a thing that I think that is much more challenging, is getting real references from international talents. You know, sometimes they've been with other U.S. employers, easier, but very often you're.
That is true. That is true. I mean, we have a whole department doing that, right? And they're speaking oftentimes in Spanish with the companies or Portuguese, because all of the talent is in Latin America. But it's true. When you're a smaller company, also, how much time are you really going to spend doing that and tracking down those references? What we do is we go over the job references and not your personal references. So let's say call me 5 references. No, I'm going to call the places you worked at, and I'm going to call
them. I apologize for cutting you off. Didn't mean to. But we have a hard rule for myself, which is I don't want a peer reference. It's got to be somebody you reported to.
Yeah.
Domestically, this is bigger. I don't like judges, because they want their law clerks to be employed, and law and university professors, because university professors, their job is to get somebody a job. It's nice, but it doesn't it doesn't differentiate. And that's always like, it checks a box, but is it worth checking? What are your feelings on backdoor references? Jack Newton, I think at Clio, we had a great podcast years ago where he talked about making sure that you find out not just the people on the list, but if they've been with an organization, can you find out, you know, for reals what's going on? What's your feeling on that?
So in what specifically?
Meaning there's the people that you're given as references, but they're playing the LinkedIn game, and or, you know, if they've been with an organization, you may be able to get a reference that's not listed there. If there's a job they had without a reference listed, that may be a good place to see, oh, I know somebody at that organization. Do they know anything?
Yeah, I think anyone that you can contact that is not a peer or is not their work coworker, best friend. The way we start is really by just finding out and calling that organization and trying to find, okay, who was the supervisor? Is the supervisor still around, right? To be able to talk to the supervisor, but also validating with HR that the dates where they say they were there, they were actually there, because sometimes they inflate the resume, and were the roles that they describe are actually what they actually did that. Like, we've had people saying they were COO when they were a paralegal. You know, this is like hiring for a VP of client success for ourselves. So it's almost like an investigator type of
Right.
Work, no, it's, you know, it's like you put their social medias and things like that as well.
Very, very interesting. When you're going through that process, do you, just, I think we're going to go back to mistakes in a second, but do these people generally sit at home, or do you have offices that they go to in their countries?
Good question. They work from home, but we vet their workspace. We ensure that they have a private office. We don't allow for co-location. You know, we make sure that they have a closed door office where they're working from, that the internet is high speed, all of that.
Yeah. So look, these are for anybody out listening, as a guy who's built my own internal international labor twice, you know, mistakes we've made. Making sure that when you do your IT check with for speed and for web for Wi-Fi, that we end up, you know, early days. Oh, they were early. At a cafe where it was great. Yeah. No, it needs to be at the home. Do you you know, things that I've struggled with, and I'm curious, in a home environment, which very often they're in, where there's, you know,
the dog barking.
Well, dark barking, I'm not even going there yet. Let's assume we get some decent headphones. But the piece that really gets me is if the kids come home from school and they're on Netflix, is that taking away bandwidth from the job?
Yeah.
And so figuring that piece out. Again, I'm giving you stuff I've struggled with. I assume you guys are much more advanced and sort of get a sense of making sure that stuff, like, not – you know, learning from mistakes, like what are the things you do to make sure that you have a fighting chance with the person?
Yeah, absolutely. You have to find out who else is in the household, if there are kids and things like that. And if sometimes you need to have a second connectivity, you know, especially if you're doing intake and you need to have, you're going to be on the phone, that quality, voice quality, not choppy, or it's super important, right?
So those are countries. Are there countries that are more difficult? Like we really had a trouble. We love the people in Venezuela, but we couldn't get consistency.
No, absolutely. Yeah, we don't. Unfortunately, we cannot.
It's
my
so
husband
sad.
Is in Venezuela right now. My husband is actually from Venezuela. And like we had a call yesterday and he's like, I cannot. This is like crazy, you know. So Venezuela is very
the
common.
Thing with the entrepreneurs, my EOS coach, Caesar, who I'm sure you know. From Miami, amazing guy. He is our coach for both Blue Shark and for Price Bandwidth. An amazing guy. But you know, another testament to the talent that's in Venezuela that has come out of Venezuela, and that we can't get a stable internet connection. Yeah. Maybe
I think it's going to change now. We'll
with,
see.
Yeah, with Musk's satellite based, that would be pretty cool.
Yeah.
Talk about, you know, we have seen something and we're bouncing. I know we're going to come back to the mistakes, but we have seen pricing go up of talent, you know, that, you know, numbers that used to be really cheap have become more expensive as people good know their worth and there's competition, et cetera.
Yes.
But like it would be great for the global economy if you ended up bringing an entire country of highly trained talent to the workforce where the biggest factor was connectivity.
Yes. Yes, absolutely.
Okay. Other mistakes.
Not having a onboarding process, like a set good onboarding process. So a lot of law firms, they think I'm just going to bring, okay, let's say you define the role, you got a person who has a perfect match, but they come in and you just let them try to figure things out on their own. That's a big, big mistake because you're going to be let down. You need to have an onboarding process. You need to have SOPs. Depending on how the person is better trained, because you can also learn from assessments if someone learns better from data, reading SOPs and things like that, or if someone learns better from shadowing and from experience. So either deductive or inductive type of learning. So for example, if you're hiring someone to do intake, it's very important that a person can shadow someone else and listen to those calls and see how you're doing things, but also very important that you have scripts, right, for them to follow and how to deal with objections and things like that. So a lot of small law firms, they don't have SOPs and they say they don't have time to create those. What we help them do is we help them guide through. First of all, we've created a full onboarding process where we handhold the law firms and we have to give them homework. We keep them accountable week after week to ensure that that's done successfully. But also we help them. Okay, so if you don't have SOPs, record everything you're training this person. And our coaches help ensure that this person is creating manuals for the law firm, is creating SOPs. Obviously, the lawyer has to review.
Do you start with, if somebody has no SOPs, right? The big problem, right? Nobody has them. I didn't have them for years. And it's too much of a pain to even do these video ones because by the time you do it, you've grown, it's different, you know, it's evolved. Yeah. Do you have off-the-shelf ones where somebody could say, yeah, this is good and make this one change? Or are there SOPs that can be adopted by these firms?
We have, since we have the Staffy Live service that is a full intake and service for law firms, we have a lot of scripts already created depending on the type of law you do.
You have ones they can sort of prove, because it's so much easier for an entrepreneurial lawyer to be able to say, love it or love it, change this and this, versus I got nothing and starting from zero is really tough. I mean, ChatGPT has helped us with some of the stuff,
right.
But it's the idea that you guys have seen the inside of hundreds of law firms and get a sense as to what works. And it's almost like, here's one for family law, here's one for trust and estates. You're able to provide some insights.
That's great. We don't do that because a lot of our law firms, they've shared the SOPs with us. It's highly confidential. So we are not able to do that. But what we do is we advise the lawyer. So anytime you're talking to your offshore hire and you're training them on how you want things done, we are creating SOPs based on that training.
Right. And my sales pitch to you guys is that if you had a generic one that didn't violate other firms, but was a generic starting point, because I think that's what law firms struggle with, is there are people that know what they want and there are others that don't. And if you have one that's best practices, go change it to what you want, but at least here's something, because right now you're no longer on a page. And I think that is where I've personally struggled, where somebody starts. Yeah. And
that's a good point. And we do that for intake. I think it's a good idea to have it for, you know, case manager, paralegal. We advise them and what we think, oh, why don't you do like this or like that? Well, we don't have those documents right now off the shelf, but that's a good idea.
You know, what is your advice for people when it comes to, you know, look, there's different price points, I assume, based on experience and anything in life. Do you think that experience within the legal space, having worked inside another immigration shop or a personal injury shop, is significant, or can everything be trained? You know, is it worth paying slightly more to have somebody, especially for a firm that doesn't really know what it doesn't know?
I love that question. And I say, no, it's not. It's not worth it. I think when you're hiring the right person with the right skills, the right traits that you've assessed correctly, anything can be bought.
Hire for traits, not for skills.
Hire for traits and skills, but not for experience. There are so many hires, and we've been doing this for 11 years. A lot of people paying like extra and extra because, oh, they came from this PI law firm or X, Y, and Z, and they would be terrible. You know, well,
no, understood. But let me ask you this, the other, because there's a saying, Woody Allen, Groucho Marx is saying, why would you ever be the member of a club that would have you as the member? So if somebody was willing to work for you, if that other firm gave up on this person, how good could they be? Like, that's the joke. Also. Right. So, but one of the things I would say is that with experience, like when I'm hiring, mm-hmm. There's a bunch, like when you look at baby lawyers, new lawyers, right? And there's a type of law you're doing. There's a risk that the person's not going to like it. If you're doing intake and the person's done intake for 4 years, there's a pretty good chance they know what they're getting themselves into.
Right.
You know, forget about the learning curve. How much of a risk is it that, you know, we're looking for, what's a win to you? 3 years?
Yeah.
Somebody's with the firm 3 years. That's a solid run.
Yeah. So let me reframe that. So having some sort of work experience is important, not necessarily in a law firm and not necessarily doing the type of law that you're doing. But yes, like
do they like it? Because again, it's
money. Someone out of college that didn't have any zero work experience, it's a higher risk.
But okay, but take somebody who's 10 years out of college, right? 15 years out of college. And you're like, they've never done intake before.
Right.
You train them, they could be done it. And again, there's positives,
right.
But is there a risk factor as to whether they will click in general. Now,
yeah.
I mean,
or that they will be able to put up with the volume. If you're high, like being able to be on the phone 7 hours out of eight, is not for everybody.
No.
So
that's a risk.
What I would do is I usually would put them through Staffy Life first, and
to
depending
see if they like it.
Yes. So that is not the risk on the client.
How long is Staffy Live?
Huh?
How long is Staffy Live? How long are they in it?
So it depends. It could be 3 months, you know, could be.
You know, that's amazing. You're doing a 3 month training program.
I mean, we've done it. We've done for Staffy Live because I wouldn't put someone who's never done intake with a client that does high volume intake. Now I will put someone that has never done intake, but they can, I'm talking about full blood intake all day. Right? That's different. But someone that has had admin experience, has had client service experience, but it could be a hybrid role. But Staffy Live, it could be 1 month, 2 months, 3 months. It all depends. We've done it. We've done it. And sometimes we just keep them for ourselves too.
And as I know, I've been passionate about, I thought about building out myself. The idea that you're doing, you know, before training was either non-existent or at max a week. And the idea that people are seeing the value that if you take global workforce and really give them additional training, part of it was there wasn't a curriculum to give, but over time with expertise, it's there. Anything else before we move on that mistakes that you see law firms make, you wish they didn't make?
So integrating, a lot of law firms, they hire someone, they call them VA, which dehumanizes the person, which is not good. So you're kind of setting yourself up for failure before you even start, because language really matters. If you're thinking, oh, it's a VA, someone who's going to be isolated, I'm just going to send them tasks whenever I feel like it, that's not going to work well. So you have to fully integrate the person into your law firm and consider them as important of a hire as you would an in-person staff, right? And you said that, and you know.
No, I get it. But let me ask you this. Agreed. And look, we've gone as far as we fly a number of international workers in for the office party every year. It's tough as you get bigger, but we try to at least do that as a reward for some of our great talent. Not that they're not all great, but it is different, right? There's a difference domestically when somebody's remote, and there's a difference when they're internationally remote, especially if it comes to coming to all hands or on sites. What are some of the things you think that can be done, that understanding that you can do Zooms, you can put everybody on there, you can treat people there, but there is a difference in that even if you want to, you can't always get people here. We've had issues with the visas and just coming for a visit. How do you differentiate? You're having a holiday party. They're not there. What are some of the best practices that help understanding you're not calling them VAs and you're not isolating them and you're including, but there's a certain things that can't happen. What are things that help you push furthest to truly making it part of a group, even though there will be some differences?
Okay. So first of all, include them in any communication that you have for your company. So you have Slack, Teams, whatever that is, have that person part of it, have that person part of different groups, have that person participate in team meetings, have other people from, let's say if I'm hiring someone to work with me, have other team members work with that person, you know, have them feel part of a team. We also do, like, you have to make an effort to sometimes do some virtual activities. Like you can make, scavenger hunts, or you can do karaoke, things like
any
that.
Sometimes services virtual... that you love for that? Anything that you love. During COVID, we hired comedians. We did a bunch of online things, but when COVID was over, we sort of gave up on that.
Yeah.
What are some of the ones you like best as far as international team building type activities?
So via Zoom, we love karaoke. We've done Three Truths and a Lie. We've done you have to bring pictures of when you're little and the other team members have to guess who's that person. There's like a big list that you can do like once a month, you know.
Right. And that's all on the clock, correct? You're paying for the time.
Yes. Yes. And it's part of team building integration. Now, we just came back from Medellin. We flew 20 people to Medellin to be part of a training. And so you don't have to do, if you're serious about investing in offshore and you want to really and you can grow and scale your law firm with leveraging offshore talent. I don't know how many people you have internally that are working everywhere, but you don't have to bring them to the US. You can find somewhere else too, and you can do some
But then you don't have all, you have some of your people. It's not the same. And that's what I was getting at.
Right.
We've talked about.
Or you can take everybody to do an offsite.
Right.
You know, it's more complicated, but you can do a lot of things remotely to make someone feel part of a team. You can meet with them daily in video. It doesn't have to be you, but people from, it's just like this that we're doing right now. It's like, okay, let's hop on a Zoom. Let's all hop on a Zoom. Let's all hop on Teams. You know,
that's happening to a certain extent. It's the next stage, which is there's we're doing our summer kickoff party. You know, we've done things where, you know, we'd love to be able to Uber Eats, but that doesn't always exist everywhere. But we'll give a budget for if we're doing a coffee here's a budget to go, you know, bring in lunch or do whatever you're going
to
do.
And I think you can make that person special by sending something to their homes, you know, like if you can do an activity like, oh, everybody received. So let's say something in the office, like everybody received the wine and the cheese. We're going to do a wine and cheese happy hour. You send.
Right. And it's like everything else. It takes effort. So now you need a person to do that.
Absolutely.
A couple of little things. One, just a blip. We've seen this both domestically, but we've also seen it internationally. Issues of people double dipping, with international work. What are some of the things you've seen that can help prevent, you know, again, hopefully you're testing and you're getting the right people, but, you know, some nominal percent are going to abuse the system.
Right.
Some people think, hey, if they're hitting their KPIs, who cares? You can do whatever the hell you want.
Right.
But, that's a real something out there. I assume it's making sure the KPIs are being met, because if they are, it's harder to game the system.
Yeah, that's one. I think it's very easy to measure intake and sales, right? Like, for example, we use MoneyTask internally. Everybody has MoneyTask. Uh-huh. But my sales team doesn't need to use MoneyTask, because I know if they're performing, they're selling, right? And this is true for anyone working remotely, you know? So you're nailed on the KPIs. If you have good KPIs and you're monitoring them, you know, monthly or every so often, you're going to see if the person's performing. But you can also use tools like MoneyTask. We usually use MoneyTask at the first 3 months of someone being assigned to
a law firm. It measures mouse strokes and looks at the...
They measure all the activity. And,
activity. Look, one of the things that we don't look at it regularly unless it's a problem. We never look at it. You know what I mean?
Exactly.
But it's activity is the last thing you want to measure. That said, when you do see somebody using a machine to do it, which we've seen, that would be an indication there's more problems. Do you know what I'm saying? Like, it's, you're not even, to one extent, you're not using it because you're like, oh, you work 5 minutes less or 10 minutes less. That's not the game. But when you see, it's just another tool to determine, is there something that's not right going on?
Exactly. And usually you will only check if there's a problem, if you see that the person's not being productive. Like you said, nobody is micromanaging or being there watching, but it's very useful when you say, interesting, this person is not responding as quick, or this person is not delivered, that deadline passed. Then you check and you're like, or you say, maybe they're focusing on the wrong things. Maybe you can learn, you use as a tool to learn how is that they're working and to coach them, because that's the other point to coaching and mentoring. That's why we implemented the methodology of having coaches assigned to each rep assigned to the law firms. It's, you know, people that they're talking to, because it also helps them feel integrated. It helps them, you know, so you train them, you select the person, you select the tasks, then you put the person to do the tasks. You train them, you have a universe, you train them for the tasks, but now it's time for real life. So people, they have questions, they get stuck, and sometimes the team, or many times the team is very busy and you don't want someone to be sitting there doing nothing specifically, especially in the beginning. So it's important to have a key people that they can go to. In our case, we have coaches assigned to help and support the law firms. But if you're doing this on your own, It's important that they know who to go to and they have an open office, open door opportunity to be able to, you know, not to get unstuck so that productivity is not affected.
One thing that I've seen, and there are two final questions. One thing that they're sort of tied together. One thing that I've seen is that people sort of sometimes try to put tasks with a global workforce that might not be easily done from somebody, especially coming in off the street, who's not highly experienced, case manager, right, versus a legal assistant. Legal assistant, you give somebody tasks, it's there. Case managers, forward facing, have many, many different responsibilities,
yeah,
well beyond what you could train in a week, a month, or even 2 months, probably. What is your feeling on creating a bench with your international team so that you can figure out who has the potential to go to the next step, and that through osmosis and learning the firm and learning the language, that they're able to get to the point where they can be elevated? Now, somebody's been a case manager somewhere, you could evaluate it, but you talked before about somebody coming in with skill, with traits, not skills.
Right.
You know, do you see people trying to put people in a position that's unrealistic,
yes,
without those touch points, and that it's destined to fail?
Absolutely. So it all starts with we have a dashboard that you choose the tasks and you can have different categories. So then the case manager, for example, they're going to be doing client facing, they're going to be doing some legal, they're going to be doing some admin tasks. It's important they get trained specifically in how to do those tasks. And yes, to your point, we have a bench of like they are there, and
hopefully you have, you know, your utility infielders if you're, and then
they're going through the training and they're doing tasks, right, while they're waiting, and we are assessing them throughout the whole time.
Move up to those pieces, because we've seen that in like the intake space. It's one thing to do intake; it's another to do sales.
Right.
You're doing intake and it's being passed off to somebody else to sell, like in criminal or family. Great, it's one level. But when it's somebody who's closing a PI case, that's a lot. There's a lot going on, and you probably don't want that as a first job coming out, but
right,
rather somebody who's done other things and elevated to that, which sort of pivots my last point, what I've been sort of giving a lot of thought to. This was a domestic hire, but I think the analogy could be made for any global person, which is we hired people and two of them didn't work within a short period. I've 300 employees between two organizations. We have a lot of hiring experience, and we made two mistakes and reflected why. One person left and one person we pushed out. And what it looked like was we didn't pay enough to get the talent that we needed for that position. And that there's one thing about saving money, but there's another that when there's a marketplace, and there's more and more of a marketplace, more than when you even started Staffy, that there's people out there that know what they're worth, that there starts to be a point where that if you try to pay too little, that there's a good chance, as happened to me, that things are not going to work out, versus understanding that there are, you know, if an expert tells you, like a Staffy, hey, you need somebody at this level, trying to pay less may seem like a way to save money, but very often will end up with, you know, there's a reason it didn't work out. We put too little expertise behind what we needed.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
What are your thoughts on that? Sort of,
I think in the case that the example that you mentioned, so it seems like it was like you didn't put enough thought to define exactly what the person would be hired for. Was it?
No, we knew what it was. We just paid too little.
Oh,
and you got somebody like we knew what we wanted.
Yeah,
we know that.
Right,
and we thought that like and sort of when people come to a global talent group, they're like price sensitive potentially,
right,
so they're trying to save money off of, let's say, domestic labor.
I would say that you cannot be cheap. You know, you have good talent. You have to be abundant in the way you think, and you have to obviously pay well for the talent. People have to feel appreciated. If someone is feeling like they're being taken advantage of, or in any way, payment is one of the ways. You're going to have high turnover. So it's really important to treat your people well, right? In different ways. Payment is one of the ways. you know, sending little things like we're saying, like including them in the party, like even if they're in via Zoom, or sending them gifts to their house so they can feel appreciated is another way. I think the better you treat your staff, the more rewarded you will be back. And, right. You know,
No. Look, I know that money is not the first thing.
But I think if lawyers are going into this saying, I'm just going to get cheap and get squeezed the most out of it, the most that I want, they're going to be, it's not going to work for them.
Agreed. And yeah. I'm going one step further, which is when
it's not only, it's not right now, we're at a point that it's not about the money. It's about having great talent, loyal talent, hardworking. Like you said, prices are going up. People are like, it's getting this global workforce that, you know, there's law firms that are like, they don't even know, and they overpay, and then somebody else now wants more. You know what's happening in the market. So it's beyond the price, but having and finding good people that are loyal, people that are going to stay a long time working for you, you know, and what we hear is that that's harder and harder to find in the US.
Right. And that's, I think, where as much as the international number has gone up, the delta that as groups like yourself have helped figure out how to create those systems for law firms
right.
and train and cultivate and give best practices on keeping people happy, that it becomes, you know, as what I'm looking at is I want to be able to retain my US talent. And then as I grow, add a global team member so that I'm able to cover more right. and grow that way rather than, you know, have two people at a mediocre salary in the US
right.
where they're going to break. I'm either not going to get the right people or I have the right people and they're not going to stay, but maintaining the people, keeping the people I want to keep, and while at the same time giving an opportunity at the other end, and that the combined number hopefully works, even though it's not, you know, when we started, Philippines talent was $2 to $5 an hour. It was crazy.
Right.
But the idea is, if you're looking at it as I need a job done and what's that entire team going to cost me, that then you're looking at it from a, what does it take to get the job done, rather, because I would argue that at the lowest end, the risk is that the pure task-based people are the ones that are going to be at risk for AI job loss. And that as you get people that are integrated into your team that help solve the widget, yes, you'll have AI, but that's going to be for the stuff at the bottom. And hopefully that right. allows your team members to excel. And that's where balancing domestic, international, and technology, sort of that whole mosaic, is what's going to give you profitability.
Yeah, it makes sense. I think the higher levels you can hire for some roles in the US, you can get the support to them from Latin America, and then you have the magical formula.
Well, Raquel, this has been fascinating. Thank you so much for your time. You've been great for the industry. I know that when people started off with international labor, it paled in comparison to what Staffy's put together. So congratulations for all that you've done, and thank you for what you've done for the industry.
Thank you, Seth. It was a pleasure to be here, and you're such a smart guy. So great talking to you.
Thank you so much for your time, guys. We thank you for listening, and we can't wait to see you back here.
Thank you.
Thank you for tuning in to the SEO Insider with Seth Price. Be sure to check back next week for fresh insights into building your brand's online presence. Episodes are available to stream directly on Blue Shark Digital's website.